Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 50 of Art for Your Ear. Episode 50. That is insane. What's not insane, and actually quite nice, is that this episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Okay, so for 50, I knew I had to get someone that I've been trying to get since the very beginning, and I did. An elusive, shy, super talented abstract painter tucked away in the hills of Ireland. Yep, after many guilt trips and Facebook messages that simply consisted of, please, I finally got Lola Donahue to agree to come on the podcast. Her work is beautiful, she is one of the sweetest people ever, and her story is so inspiring and fantastic. Obviously, I could not take no for an answer for the big 5-0. Okay, let's do this. We're going to jump in midstream as I try to convince Lola that this won't be scary. Ready? Here we go.
That's good.
Yeah. So you don't have to worry. And, you know, very often I don't end up editing anything because it's really just like having a phone call with a friend and then you hang up.
I know, but I'm just so, I have to actually go and get help about this because I need to be able to, I mean, if I ever exhibit, I need to be able to speak.
Although could just be like a fancy, like hermit-like.
One of these, an enigma that doesn't speak or isn't seen.
Yeah. There's like some cachet in that.
Well, I'm not doing it very well if I'm on here speaking.
Well,
it may not go out yet.
No,
I have my fingers crossed.
That what? That I don't put it out?
No, that I get through it.
Oh my goodness! Of course you will. Okay, so maybe I just won't even tell you when I hit record, and then you won't even know.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, we're starting. So if you're feeling like whatever, we'll just say, okay, I just need to like do this for a minute, okay?
Take that up off the floor.
Yeah. But it's really just a phone call with me.
Yeah, okay.
Seriously. No video, nothing, just us catching up. And I am so excited to catch up with you because I loved meeting you when we were in Dublin. I couldn't believe I actually got to meet you. That was so weird.
I know, that really was. And I wouldn't normally kind of go and meet people that I don't know either.
I know.
That's something that I would do, but I just, yeah, and it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, I just felt like I'd known you forever, and I wish that we could have sat there longer or gone out with you guys or whatever.
I know. It's probably better that you didn't, because we ended up getting back to it's the Four Seasons. We ended up getting back there at 6 a.m. and ordering room service, and we got two burgers and paid €80 for the burgers. Most expensive ever.
See, I wish we had done that with you. Instead, we went to bed responsibly, got up early, and went to a tech conference. And it was so boring.
You were very tired. You wouldn't have been able to. I mean, if you're going out in Ireland with Irish people, you need you need to be in your full health.
Oh, I would have rallied. I would have got my Canadian lumberjack strength and rallied. But no, it's always nice to meet you guys. And Tomas is so amazing. And so it was really cool to actually meet you because I'd loved your work for so long. And then,
the whole thing was just.
Well, it was weird that I was in Ireland. I've never been there in my life. Like, it was just so, the whole thing was very, very surreal.
I know, but you'll have to come back again and have a proper visit.
I know. And I want to come up your way.
Yeah, Galway is lovely.
Yeah, my sister traveled all around Ireland and she said Galway was her absolute favorite. She ended up staying for an extra 2 weeks, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she just loved it.
Lots of people say that. I mean, most people just come to Dublin, that's it, you know, but the rest of the country is lovely as well.
How far away is Galway from Dublin?
It's about a 2.5-hour drive.
Yeah. Mm. See, so that's why I feel even more honored that you came down there.
Yeah.
2.5-hour drive to come down and see us. I know, I wish I'd had more time, but I would love to go back. It was so pretty and we didn't leave Dublin, so I'll have to go and do it again. Maybe this fall. I've got all sorts of like crazy book tour things and possibly Amsterdam is on the list. So if I make it to Amsterdam.
Oh, yes.
Quick little flight.
Well, yeah, or I could come to Amsterdam too.
Oh, there you go. Now you're thinking. And then you could, I need a lot of help. You could come to Paris with me in London and bring little baby Joss with you. She could be our, she can be our sidekick.
Yeah, your mascot.
Yeah. Oh, God, she's so cute. She looks just like you. Oh, blondie, okay. Beautiful.
Oh, I think we probably haven't seen her since just after she was born. She's changed. Everybody says she's like her daddy now.
Oh, really?
Apparently, I can't. We were in to have her injections yesterday, and they all said in the doctors, oh, you can't claim her anymore.
Oh, no. Yeah, but in 3 months, it'll change again. And 6 months after that, it changes again. And yeah. Okay, well, let's talk. Well, no, let's. I want to actually, because I did not ask you any of this, I don't think, when we were chatting in Dublin, but I know part of your story, but not the beginning part of your story. Yes. So when you were little, were you an art making kid?
Yeah, I suppose it was always in me. Art would have always been my favorite subject in school, in primary school and secondary school. I did another subject. It was a technology subject where I did woodwork and metalwork and plastic. So I loved that as well. So I suppose anything really, you know, that involved creating something, working with my hands, I'm good with my hands, you know.
And did you ever think that that would turn into what your job would be, or did you just like it?
No, not at that stage. Towards the end of school, yes, I did think about it, but I didn't think it was ever possible that I would actually be making a living out of it.
And so when you went to school, did you actually go, because you ended up being an art teacher for years, and so did you go to school for that?
No, I did. When I finished secondary school, I didn't go to art college straight away. I went working for a year and a half. I didn't have my portfolio ready in time. So I went working for a year and a half, and then I went back and did like a course to get my portfolio ready to get into art college.
Ah.
So I spent a year doing that. And then I did a 4-year degree in fine art first.
Oh, in painting?
Fine art painting, yes.
Yeah. And was your work abstract then?
No, it was always figurative.
Oh.
Yeah, so in third year, I was thinking back on when I, you know, wrote for your book about the big canvases, but yeah. I suppose that's where the big canvases came from. When I was in my third year, the third year of the degree course, I did some huge canvases, and they were all oil paintings, you know, they were all figures like wrapped in robes, kind of, I suppose, Baroque style.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I went into fourth year, I stopped painting. I didn't use any paints, and it was all materials, you know, I was using curtains, fabrics, and I was drawing like the female form on that. So, you know, I never really, it was never abstract.
Wow.
So the abstract came, I suppose. Yeah, I would never have called myself an abstract artist. But when I went back, when I did decide to leave teaching and I went back, I suppose I hadn't lifted a paintbrush in 10 years. And I just was literally trying to get paint onto the canvas to mess around with it, you know, see what it could do, what I could remember. You know, oil paint is, you know, has its different properties and drying times and that kind of stuff. So I was really messing around, just experimenting, and I kind of created some things that I liked. I enjoyed what I was doing. So I continued down that road then. And, you know, I started, obviously there was stories behind it. I had plans and ideas, but it seemed to stay abstract. So here I am 3 years later doing the abstract.
Oh my gosh. And so when you were teaching, how long did you teach for?
10 years.
10 years. And primary school or high school?
So yes. So back to, so I did the 4-year degree, and I didn't really know what to do. I went away on holidays with my friends. We went interrailing around Europe straight after. Oh no, I didn't go around. I had applied for the teacher training year. I said, I'll do it. If I get it, I'll do it, and it'll be just a qualification. I didn't want to be a teacher, but I said I'd like to have the qualification.
Mm-hmm.
So I got it. And then because I got it, it was a difficult course to get into. There were limited places. So I said, well, I better take it anyway and do it. So I did it. I remember my tutor saying to me, oh, Lola, don't go teaching, you know, do a master's, stay and do a master's. But anyway, I did the teaching. And after I had that year completed, I went interrailing around Europe with my friends and had got out some loans. So when I came back, I said, oh, I better try and get a job and pay back my loans. So I naively thought, oh, I'll just get a teaching job for a year. But so I got out the phone book and actually looked at all the schools in my area within driving distance. And I sent out CVs and I got a reply back from one of them. And they said, can you come in for an interview today? And I said, so I just went in and had an interview there and then, and they gave me the job. I mean, when I think back now, it was just so easy. I don't know how it happened. It's because it's so difficult now to get, you know, to get a teaching job here.
Yeah, same here.
Oh,
wow. Oh,
sorry. I had that phone turned off, you know. I don't know. I must have turned it back on. So so then I started teaching, and I had only planned on doing 1 or 2 years. And I remember my friend, I got, you know, made lots of friends there, but one in particular, Magella, every September, you know, we'd start back and she'd say, oh, Lola, you're still here. You need to go and start painting. Teaching is a trap, you know, you'll never get out if you don't go now. And I'd say, no, I'll be going. So this went on, and eventually I was there for 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
And I had just lost kind of my, I was young, teaching gave me a nice lifestyle, and I always knew I had a desire to paint, but as the years went by, I lost my confidence. I was drained creatively from teaching. It's, you know,
yeah.
it's such a rewarding job, but it's difficult. I think I remember you posting before you were, did you do some teaching for a while?
Yeah.
At some end, and you were, you know how tiring it is.
Yeah.
Teach art, yeah. So I used to come home in the evenings, and I did try. I had a studio in my house, but I just couldn't. And then as the years went by, I just lost it. I lost my, I suppose, mojo.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was too late then, really. I had kind of resigned to the fact that, okay, I can't really call myself an artist anymore.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's so sad. And then I guess you turned that on its head.
But that's not to say I didn't love the job that I was in. You know,
yeah.
I did teaching. I loved the students. It was an all-boys school. I got on great with them. I got on great with the teachers. I was happy. You know, I never missed a day for the first 7 years I worked there, and I was never late.
Yeah.
But it just, I suppose, yeah, just life kind of happened, and I just seemed to just, I don't know why I stayed away from painting so long.
And so what was it that, I think you told me this story, weren't you with Trev, and he said you were at a restaurant and you saw a painting or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's that story?
So we were coming up to, I was coming up to 10 years teaching, and it was still niggling in the back of my mind, you know, that I hadn't, you know, I came out of college with the first class honours degree in both my degree year and my the postgraduate diploma, and I literally just didn't use any of it then. I just, you know, I taught, I didn't do my own practice. But so we were out one night, and Trevor, there was two paintings, well, there were more drawings, you know, at our table in the restaurant, and Trevor said to me, could you draw that? And I said, yeah, I could, I suppose. And he said, I've never ever seen you drawing or painting or doing any kind of art in all the time that we've been together. And
wow.
I said, yeah, and that just struck a chord with me, you know. I was like, oh my god, I just haven't done it, you know, it's just gone. And then he said, you know, you have a gift and you're just not using it. So the subject changed. Anyway, we continued on the conversation, but the next day, it obviously, you know, the seeds were sown, so to speak, and I picked up a pencil, and I just started sketching. There was a magazine in front of me, and I just started sketching from the magazine, and that seemed to ignite the fire again, and that's where it all started.
Wow. Yay, yeah. Trevor.
There was a whole host of things kind of at that time that just made the switch go on again.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably realizing you'd been there for 10 years.
Yeah. I just didn't want to regret, you know, not having tried it.
Yeah. And so from the sketches of the magazine, is that sort of shortly after, is that when you sort of picked up and just started putting paint on canvas to see what it would look like?
Well, I started doing kind of drawings first, you know, the illustrations.
Oh, in that notebook that I have?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That shortly after that. So, yeah, and then I started painting. Now, I was still at school at this point, you know, so I think it was the following year then that I decided I was going to take a year out initially is what I had planned, to try to see if I could. I didn't really know. I mean, even at that point, I was taking the year off, but I was saying, well, there's no way I'm going to actually be able to make a living out of this, but I just want to try. I just want to paint for a year, basically, and enjoy doing it. So I did.
And
I took the year off.
And so you took the year off, and this was not very long ago.
That was 3 years ago.
3 years ago. So did you have a sabbatical from school because you'd been there for 10 years? So you were able to take that year?
You're allowed to take, you're allowed to take a career break. Obviously you don't get paid. Now I had a house and I had a mortgage. I tried to get relief on my mortgage so that I wouldn't have to pay it. But the bank, because of the recession, they weren't giving relief to anybody. So that was the first kind of stumbling block. But I said, no, I have my mind made up. I have to, if I don't do it now, if I don't take this year off, I'm never going to do it. So I used up my savings and Trevor said he'd support me for the year. So that was it.
Wow.
So I just started back painting then.
And so when you first started, so you just went in with abstracts, with painting, like you didn't even bother with figurative, did you?
No, I didn't.
No. And did you start smaller or did you start really big?
Yeah, no, I started smaller. Funnily enough, I had, I'd say for about 7 years in my house, I had bought some canvases and I'd say there was three or four boxes of them and they were in a room. I've since moved house now, but in my older house, I had a studio. It was just a small room and there was three boxes of canvases in that room for, I'd say, 7 years.
And they sounds like my studio.
Yeah, so they just sat there the whole time and I just couldn't paint them. So I think you asked me before about having a block, you know, and I don't have blocks now, but I suppose you could consider that 10 years a block.
Yeah, no kidding.
Major block.
Yeah. Major block. And then it all happened really fast for you. So you started painting and then did you put them up on Etsy or how did people start seeing them?
Yeah, I had been on Etsy myself just buying as a buyer and I just put up one or two and I remember, I think it was, they were up for like ages and then I sold one and I couldn't believe it. I'll never forget selling that painting.
Where did the person live? Were they far away from you?
I think they were in England.
Okay.
Yeah. But I sold the painting. I didn't know how I was going to, I hadn't thought ahead. You know, I just put it up. I didn't know how I was going to ship it. I didn't have a box for it. I didn't have cardboard. I had nothing. I didn't even know how to put in the, you know, the cord at the back so that they could hang it. But I just sold it and I was dancing around the house. I was overjoyed. But then I had to, you know, try and get cardboard, try and make a box, you know, from pieces of cardboard. And I can still picture myself down on my hands and knees doing that, cutting up pieces of cardboard, wondering how I was going to fit it together, how this was going to get there in one piece. But I did it, yeah.
And now you must have like a full like production line of packing supplies in your new studio.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I actually have a few rooms. I have one room specifically for packaging.
Oh, So
and
funny.
I have pre-made boxes now.
Yeah, smart.
I used to make them myself. I had to make up templates for the different sizes, and we used to have just sheets of cardboard and cut them up and then put them together. But now I get them die cut. They're made to size.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so you sell your first painting, you're jumping around, cutting a box on the floor. And so then are you like, okay, maybe I'll put five up?
Okay, so I had done a few more, and I put them up, and over, I suppose, the space of a few months, they sold as well.
But it was very slow,
you know. I was selling the odd one here and there, but I was thrilled even at that.
Yeah. And so in that time, did you start making them bigger? Like, when did you start experimenting with size?
But I remember, I don't know, because I remember one of the ones that I had sent, I remember thinking, God, that's big. But it was only, looking back now, it was like a 24 by 24. So it wasn't really big compared to what I do now.
Yeah.
So I don't really know how I got to, I think when I was buying the canvases, I just bought bigger ones. I hadn't really made a conscious decision to go bigger, but I just was looking at all the different sizes, and I just decided to buy bigger ones and try them. And
do you find them quite exciting, those big ones?
Well, the ones I buy in, the pre-made ones, are the largest ones of those would be like 40 by 40, but the really big ones, I make them up myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love the large canvases, I have to say. But maybe that's because, I suppose, abstract lends itself well to, you know, having a large area to work on. I think if I was doing more figurative work or intricate work, I probably would be working smaller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess with the abstract, you've got more room to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I try to work on a small piece, I feel like I need more space. I like mark making and all that, and I like to have room, and the big canvases, you know, give me that.
Right. Well, I was so happy that you wrote that little chunk in the new book, because I've got a chapter about how the white page can be blinding, because some people get so. Well, like, I mean, you did. You had all those boxes of canvases for 7 years
that
you didn't want to touch, right? And then for fear of wrecking them, or for fear of not having a good enough idea, or, you know, just lack of ideas in general.
Exactly. It was just complete, you know, I just didn't even take them out of the box.
Yeah. And now, I mean, I've seen photos of your studio, which is so beautiful. Are you still in the same one where you've got the glass door that faces?
Yes, I am. But I'm thinking about moving. This studio is here in the house.
Right.
So I moved into the house in the meantime as well, our new house, and I have a room upstairs, and that's where I work. But I'm thinking now about getting a studio away from the house again.
Now that you have a child.
I get bored very easily, but it was fantastic at the time when I moved in. I loved having the studio here, and I it's good now when I have the baby, because I can go up and down whenever I feel like. But I think now when I'm at home, I want to be at home, and I like to keep work away maybe from the house.
Yeah, totally.
And plus, when it's your house, I mean, you're still trying to mind it. You know, I'm trying to not get paint, like take chunks out of the wall or get paint all over the place. And it does take its toll. I mean, I have a lot of stuff coming in and out of the house and going up and down the stairs. And just, you know, the whole house is taken over, basically. So I'm lucky in that sense that Trevor is away, because if he was here all the time, I wouldn't probably get away with half of what I'm doing.
Well, and yeah, your stuff is so big that it does, like that. I was going to say, I saw photos of that studio, and it's just wall to wall giant canvases, because you've got lots of them in different phases, right? Because of the oil.
Yeah. And I still don't have enough space, but I think, I mean, as an artist, will you ever have enough space? Do people always want a bigger studio?
Yes.
Maybe. I think I will anyway.
Yeah, me too. Because the mess just gets bigger and this new more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when I asked you, because blank canvases have always sort of scared me. I think that's why, I don't know, I like starting on surfaces that already have something on there. And in a way you kind of do, because, which I didn't realize when you wrote that little blurb for me, you said that's sort of what you do, is you just make your first initial marks.
Yes. I try, like, I don't think about the blank canvas ever. Like, when you asked me about it, I suppose that was the first time really I had thought, oh, this is, you know, I need to think about a blank canvas. I just straight away get something on there. I don't care what it is, just go for it. Whether it's paint, marker, chalk, whatever.
And just sort of let it take shape.
Yeah, and I'm really expressive at that point, you know, and I may have some drawings there, you know, whatever ideas I'm working on for that particular piece. They may be there, they may not, they may get covered over, I may bring them back through again. So I really, it's hard to describe, but yes, I always just go for it straight away. And the more actually I think about the painting when I'm doing it, the more I kind of get a bit... I kind of hold myself back a bit, so I try not to think too much.
Yeah, I really like that you said that too, that it's almost that sometimes you'll actually even paint over your favorite part of it.
Yeah, sometimes, I mean, you're creating a piece and there's something happens that you really like and you're like, oh, that's cool. But you're trying to get everything else in to fit around that or to work with that. So sometimes that piece, even though you love it, it can kind of hold you back.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you paint over it, it just takes that away and you're able to get on with it then. You know, I learned back in college was, you know, from my tutor, he used to always say to me, Lola, don't be precious about your work. And I suppose it's one of the things that stands in my mind. And I'm not afraid to paint over things, even if I love it, just to get rid of it so that I can continue on and get to wherever I'm going with the piece.
I don't know if you realize what an amazing skill that is. Like, that's fantastic that you can do that. I mean, I would wager a guess that most artists, like, that's really a hard thing to do.
But it is so, it does kind of release you as well. You get, you know, it is good when you do that.
Yeah.
But maybe being working with abstract, it's easier to do that. I'm sure if I was doing, you know, a still life that I had spent hours and hours and hours, I mightn't be as keen to paint over it and start
right
again.
Right,
you know, so
do you ever have any desire to do that, like, since that's sort of where you started out, to go back to figurative?
Yeah, or mentioned that because it has been in my head recently, you know, that I don't know, I think I might like to have a little change, but I'm not sure. I'm not saying I will, but yeah,
that's interesting. Or combine them or something.
Yeah, I think there definitely will be more kind of representation in my pieces going forward.
I'll be watching.
Yeah, but then, you see, I do that sometimes, and then I end up painting over it. So, who knows?
Well, your abstracts, I mean...
There are so many abstract paintings out there, you know, it's so many fabulous pieces that sometimes I'm just kind of, oh... Maybe I'll just change a little.
Well, I find yours are very recognizable, though.
Do you?
I don't know what it is, if it's your palette or the way that you make marks. I can always recognize that it's you.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, funny you should say that. One of my pieces was on, I don't know if you've seen Marvel's Jessica Jones.
No.
New Marvel Netflix series that's on, but anyway, one of my pieces was on in the set for that, and so many people emailed me to say, I think I've just seen one of your pieces, and I was just amazed at how people actually recognized it.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah
I always know. I'll have to go watch for that. That's exciting. Well, see, okay, so we kind of skipped over the whole fact about your insane success. So you gave yourself that year, and by the end of that year, things were good. Like, you're at a point now where basically when you post, like when you post paintings, they are sold almost immediately.
Yeah. I know. I still can't believe it myself. I'm touching wood. I'm touching the kitchen table here as you're speaking.
And so did it kind of happen gradually, or did something happen that kind of caused the tidal wave, or was it just...
Well, there's just, things just happened along the way that seemed to... you know, help it all. I think one of the first things was I was selling my pieces on Etsy, and then Etsy contacted me because they wanted to feature me on their blog. So they wanted photographs, and I got Magella, my friend, I asked her, would she come and take some photographs? Now, the room I had been in this house first, this is the house I'm in now, was a smaller room. And that's where I had my studio initially. And it was quite dark and it was small. So when she came to do the photos, I said, oh, we can't take the photos in here. It's just too dark. It's not nice. So there was another bigger room that was supposed to be Trevor's office. It was a big, huge room. So I said, we'll just move stuff in here and take the pictures. And she's like, okay, great. Lovely light in here. So we took the pictures in there. And after I had everything moved into that room, I was like, oh my God, I can't leave. How can I go back to that room now? It's lovely in here. So I claimed the room and that's where the photos were taken. So the photos came out really nice because, you know, there was lovely light. And when that feature went up on Etsy's blog, then I started selling a lot from that. And so there was that. And then the fact that I had moved into this new room that had lovely light, and I just felt so much better in there painting because of the light.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was one thing. So I'm trying to think. I think you mentioned me as well on your blog. That was another thing that elevated me.
Oh, really? That's exciting.
Yeah. I had people contacting me as well to tell me that I had been featured on your blog. Yeah.
That's so funny. And then we got to meet. That's so great. And yeah, and then now it's just, oh, I'm just so happy for you.
There was another thing that happened. I started actually, I remember being up in Dublin with Trevor, and he was up in, where was he was getting his visa to go to Africa. He was in Africa at the time. And I think the first year had passed and I had sold a few paintings, but nothing really, you know, and it was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Do I have to go back to school? And I was talking to myself, and then Trevor said, right, what do you need to do? You know, you need to figure out how you're going to make a business out of this, how you're going to sell, and how it's going to happen. You need to, you have to do something. So again, I just said, right. And I suppose as artists, really, we just want to paint pictures. We don't want to kind of have to do the other side of it, the whole selling and, you know, that side. But it was, I had to do it because it was either that or I had to go back to school. Mm-hmm. So then I just went home after that. I researched, you know, looked at what other artists were doing, people that were selling. I was on Satchi Art, I was on Etsy, just watching what was going on blogs, looking at other things. So I made the decision then to start putting my paintings into room settings. And it was something that I didn't really want to do because I was like, oh no, it doesn't look right. But it made people, I suppose, visualize what one of my pieces would be like, you know, in a room. Because if you buy online and not in a gallery, it's very hard just to imagine what a painting is like on a wall.
Mm-hmm. Especially the scale of yours and everything.
Pieces, yes. So I did that, and that just, again, I started selling lots after that.
So that was another, smart.
That was another thing. Even though I didn't want to do it, I just thought, oh, do they look, you know, I'm really selling things here. But it worked, and my work started selling then, you know.
And so then you were just like, okay, I'm doing this. I'm not going back to school.
So, yeah, basically. I actually had an operation, and Tomasa, my friend who I had been to school with, my best friend all my life, she came to help me after, and she never left, basically. So she's here since, and she manages the studio, and she, if you email me, you'll get speaking to Tomasa. She does all the emails, admin, she does all the orders, does all the tax. Everything. She's brilliant. Everyone should have a Tomasa.
No kidding. That's fantastic. And then you can just do what you do.
Yeah. So, yeah, I had to, you know, in the beginning, I was doing everything myself. Oh, my God. It all snowballed then. And I was kind of, you know, going around with the snowball, tumbling. It just all went berserk. And I was, you know, there was people emailing me all the time. There was orders coming in. I had to pack stuff. I had to make boxes. I had to paint. I was literally working from morning till like 11 o'clock at night for a long time.
Yeah.
You know?
And then you start to not enjoy that. Like, you know, yeah, that's not the dream that you're after.
No, it just got too much. So now I just concentrate on painting.
Oh, so amazing.
Brilliant to be able to do that. I know not many people are in that position, but I'm just lucky that I can do that.
But you've just done it so, I don't know, you've done it sort of slowly and modestly, and because you're super talented, it's all come together, and it's been so neat to watch.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I've never actually exhibited in a gallery, would you believe? You know,
I am working on that. You know that.
Yeah. But I have been contacted by some galleries, but I just haven't. I don't actually ever have any paintings to sell because they're gone as soon as they go online.
Right. That's a good problem to have.
It is a good problem, yes. But I just.
What you need to do is book a show and then just do pieces that are for that show that never, ever make it onto social media so nobody can beg you for them.
Yes, I need somebody like you now to give me good advice, Danielle.
Well, whoever's listening to this, Lola needs a show and I will come to it and we'll wear a fancy dress. No, your work is just so stunning in person. And I was trying so hard to get that New York show to come together and I really wanted giant pieces of yours. And I don't know really what's happened with that. Nothing, I guess. But... you know, there's opportunities all the time, and I always have you in the back of my mind. And so when something comes up, we will do something, or you will go and do something, or whatever.
Yes.
It's in the universe now.
Yes, the stars are coming together.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about other little stars coming together. You just became a mama.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
So exciting, and she's just so, so beautiful. 4 months old now?
4 months, yes.
Oh my goodness, I remember those days. So, how is that working? Have you decided to take a little break, or are you painting when she sleeps, or what's going on over there?
Well, I went back painting a few weeks ago. Now I'm just doing, she's still up at night, you know, I'm still doing night feeds. So I am currently doing 3 half days.
Okay.
Yeah, and her granny's are minding her on those days.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
I'm just upstairs anyway, and she sleeps for some of it anyway. So I can just go in and close the door. It's great actually to get back. I was dying to get back to painting.
Yeah, you were missing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the grannies must love it.
Oh, they love it. They love her. They call her the miracle baby.
Yeah. Oh, well, you worked hard to get her, and I'm just so happy that she's here and she's healthy and so, so beautiful, and you're just going to be such a great mama. And yeah, I'm so happy for you. I was sending you all my mama thoughts as much as I could, and I'm just so glad that she is here.
Yes, I know.
I know. Well, I'm glad that you're painting too, because I kind of wondered, I know when Charlie was little, I hadn't made art in years and years and years. I had my 10-year block. And then when he was about, I don't know, maybe one, just shy of one, I just started getting really like, ooh, I just want to make stuff. I just want to make stuff. And so I did this sort of mixed media series that I titled While You Slept. And whenever he napped, I would just work on this stuff. And they were like little drawings and collages and a bit of paint and of the things that we had done that day. So, you know, if he had seen an airplane for the first time, there was like a little airplane in the top corner.
Oh,
and
that's cute.
It was really neat because it let me be creative, but it was also sort of documenting this new thing that I was experiencing, you know. And I hate all of them now, but it was...
No, but it's... Yeah,
they were neat to have. And I actually did this one huge, like 4 foot by 4 foot one. And it was, like you said, there was corners of it that I loved and lots of it that I hated. And so I moved that thing around so many times. And and then when we were moving here, I just wanted to get rid of it. It's huge, right? And I'm like, I don't want to pack this. And my husband was like, you are not getting rid of that. And so what I did instead was I sliced it up. And I just took the little chunks that I liked. And so I framed 3 little 6x6 chunks of them. And so I have a little triptych and it's like all my favorite bits.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah, so I'll send you one of the JPEGs so you can see it. That was kind of a neat thing, but I remember just having that like creative fire, like, you know, you just need something that's just you.
Yeah.
And so are you working on anything in particular, or are you just back in there like you always have been and you've just got a bunch on the go, or are you handling it differently now, or?
Not really. I mean, I'm actually, even in the three half days, I'm actually probably getting as much done as I did before. You know, I suppose, as everyone says, you get really organized when you have a baby.
Yeah.
So I think I'm more organized now, and I'm utilize my time a lot better.
Yeah, there's less puttering because now you know you've got 3 hours.
Yeah, I'm not faffing around the place like I used to.
I know. That's the same with me when I get my studio time now. It's like, it has to be so efficient because there's 12,000 other things to do.
I know, and you're doing some beautiful work yourself.
Thank you. I saw your comments.
I can comment now and like things again now that we're doing this.
I know. Just so everybody knows, I have been hounding Lola. I think you were probably like the second person I emailed when I started the podcast, which was like almost a year ago now. And was like, yay, I'll do, you know, Lola can come on and we'll be able to catch up. Haven't talked since Dublin. And you were like, nope. It will never happen. And then I just pestered you on Facebook and pestered you. And then I even went to Tomasa and I was like, can you talk to her? And she's like, she's not going to do it. I just kept going and going and going. And so finally, I don't know how I cracked you. This is the 50th episode. This is like a big...
Oh, it is the
50th. So I got you for my 50th. And so now you can actually be my Facebook friend again, because you couldn't comment on anything, or else I would just come back with thanks. So when are you coming on the podcast?
The last day that I actually did comment, I had written something and I said, oh, Danielle's going to email me now. And you did. I was like, damn. I knew I shouldn't have.
I was like, there's the crack in the window. I'm going in.
No, I'm delighted to do it, but I sound ungrateful now saying that, but I just don't like doing interviews.
No, and you know, it's so funny. You've probably heard me say this a zillion times, that I've had a really hard time getting certain artists to come on, because they just, even if they're my good friends, they're just like, nope, I don't want to do it. I don't want to hear my voice. I don't want to, you know, and that kind of surprised me. And so now when people say no, I'm not offended at all. I just completely get it that, you know, some people don't want to, but I just, your story, well, first of all, your work is insane. You are one of the sweetest people I've ever met. And your story is so inspiring. You know, like the fact that you could have, you know, just kept teaching, you were liking it, you know, you could have seen that as your artistic outlet. But I love that you had that little niggly feeling and you've turned it into this amazing, amazing business.
Like I still love what I'm doing at the end of the day, which is what it's all about.
And you can tell, you know, your work has so much light and happiness and,
Cry.
Oh, it's because you're hormonal. but yeah, it's so, so beautiful. And so I just really wanted to share your story. And then when you wrote that chunk for the book, I loved it so much because I didn't know what you were going to say. You know, I am terrified of blank canvas, but I was like, well, Lola's clearly not. So let's get her, instead of the whole chapter being about my scared perspective, I was like, I want to hear from somebody who's like, hell no, get the bigger ones and put them on the wall and let's do this thing. And so I love that chunk of the book and so happy that you are, you know, that your words are in there. And yeah, so it was about time. We had to do this.
Yes, we did.
I was never, ever going to let you go. So you knew that.
Oh, I know. Well, I don't think I would have done it for anybody else, honey, you, Danielle.
There you go. Oh, now I'm going to cry. Okay, so now the only thing left is the speed round.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And it's easy. I gave you easy ones because I knew you were nervous. Okay. Ready?
Yep.
Favorite food?
Oh, cheese.
Is that since you've been pregnant or is that just always a go-to?
I don't even know if it is, but it's the first thing that came into my head.
Okay, we'll go with it. Cheese. Okay, well, hopefully this is not the same answer. Favorite cocktail?
Oh, I don't drink cocktails, would you believe?
Really? What do you drink?
I drink Bulmer's cider here.
Oh, yeah.
Bloomers, yeah, it's cider.
I love cider. That's my thing too.
Hey, yeah. So I never drink cocktails when I'm out. Yeah, I know.
I know. Well, we have, there's a brand of cider from, because I am surrounded by apple and peach orchards here, and we're kind of in the wine country of Canada. So there's a bunch of local ciders that are so, so good. So that's what I always have too. So you come here and have some Canadian cider.
I was watered.
Pardon?
My mouth just salivated there.
Well, we'll do a little cider tour, you and I. I'd be in for that. Okay, best or worst summer job?
Worst was waiting on tables at the Galway races.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you get your butt smacked a lot by?
No, but it was just really, really busy and hard. And, you know, it's just a hard job waiting on tables.
Yes, it is. I've only done it in, like, I think I did work 2 weeks at one restaurant and 2 weeks at another in my life. And then I was like, nope.
So I'm always nice to waiters and waitresses.
Yeah.
Because I know how hard it is.
Did you just work there for the summer or how long were you there?
Just for the summer. I also used to go around to weddings as well, but it was all real manic. You know, it was like racing out to tables, like running back and over. It was really busy, really hard. Yeah.
That's stressful.
Yeah.
I waited, I worked at a golf course restaurant one summer, and the reason I asked if you got your butt smacked was that there'd be all these men there. How old was I? 20? And there would be all these men there, and I'd come around to collect up the, you know, the beer cans and whatever, and one guy, because we would recycle them, right? And so one guy goes, let me help you with that, and he takes a beer can, smashes it on his forehead. He goes, there you go. There you go, sweetheart.
Oh.
And I took it and I said, oh, thanks. I said, that's one less one I'll have to crash against my head in the back. And, they were just so like constantly hitting on you. And it was just like gross. Like you could be my father.
Yeah, no, mine wasn't that, but that's actually worse.
Yeah, well, I quit after 2 weeks and went and got a job in a dress shop. Because I was just like, no, I can't do this. Okay, this was a question that Charlie had for you.
Okay.
Have you ever seen a leprechaun?
Yeah, you can tell him there's one that lives in the field next to my house.
Really? Does he bring you gold?
No. He just sits over there.
Oh my God, Charlie. Every year.
I can see him when I look out my studio window.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. He will lose his mind. Every St. Patrick's Day, I don't know if they did this year. He's 9 now, so he's getting a bit cool. But every year they would set out in their schoolyard little anything green they could find. Like if someone had peas in their lunch or whatever, and they'd set them out as little leprechaun traps. And they were Canadian leprechauns. But they were like 100. And then he would come home from school and he'd be like, Mommy, we put the stuff out. We came back. It was gone. It's like, I don't want to say that maybe it was the ducks or the squirrels or whatever. He's just like, it was gone. I'm sure a leprechaun took it. And so I told him, I said, okay, Charlie, I'm interviewing someone in Ireland. Any questions for them? Has she ever seen a leprechaun? So I will let him know there's one just outside the window. Yes. Perfect. Yep. Final one. And I know the answer to this. This is really a segue in a way. Have you ever sold any of your paintings to any super famous singers?
Yes.
Really? Oh, who?
Sia.
That was so exciting when you told me that. So do you know how she found you or how did that happen?
She just sent an email and asked if I had any originals for sale.
Sent it, or her manager, or her?
No, sent it herself. Well, she sent it and Tomasa had answered her, and I don't know, I was just checking through the emails on my phone and I just saw the name Sia Furler and I said, that's Harley Sia. And I don't know, and I said, well, Tomasa, I'm surprised she missed it. If it was, it mustn't be, you know. So it was kind of niggling at me to see was it. So I replied back to her and just asked her, was it her? And she said, yep, it is. Smiley face.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And didn't she end up buying three or four?
So, yeah, so I didn't have any. I was working on a collection at that time. So we would send, you know, she's on the mailing list or whatever. So, yeah. So when I had them finished, then she bought four.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Have you seen photos of them where she hung them?
No, no.
Oh, I'd be so curious to see.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so cool. I think you told me that on Facebook.
And the funny thing is, you know, it's a bit of one of those airy fairy stories. But the first time I saw her video chandelier, which I love, but there's, you know, some paintings on the wall, like a portrait and that. And I looked at them and said, oh, I'd love to have one of my pieces hanging in that room.
Did you tell her that?
No, I didn't. Oh, I think I might have said it. Yeah, I didn't go into detail. But yeah, I said that I had actually thought about that before. Yeah, so it was weird that she actually contacted me. Then it was actually very weird.
Very weird. I wonder if a piece will end up in the next video.
I had never thought that about any other, like I watch lots of music videos, but I had never thought that about anybody else's video.
That's so really cool.
She contacted me. It was like I invited her.
Yeah. You should think about all sorts of other things. See what you can conjure up. that was my last question, and that was a total cheat on the speed round because I just wanted to be able to talk about that. Well, Lola, that's it. This is what you've been so scared of for a year.
Oh,
so easy.
I know.
You want to do it every day now?
I'm not going to say I'll ever do it again because I know you will be back to me probably.
No, I am happy. I will take you for my 50th and leave you alone after that. I promise. Unless, of course, you end up in a Sia video or something, and then we'll have to have you back on to talk about that. Well, I know it's late there, and you probably need sleep because the wee baby will probably have you up soon for more feeding. Yeah.
Another hour.
Yeah.
We haven't, I'd say.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know what I mean when I say thank you. I seriously mean thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for doing this. And now we can finally talk on Facebook again without you feeling like I'm stalking you. And give Tomasa a big hug for me. And and I will talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you.
Yay. Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Are you still there?
Yes.
There. Wasn't that easy?
I don't know. I hope it was. I felt comfortable anyway after the first while.
Yeah. No, you totally sounded fine. There was no stumbles. I don't even think I have to edit anything.
God, I think you will. I think the cheese will have to go.
No way. No, the cheese is staying in. A nice brie with a cracker? That's delicious. Not a hunk of cheddar. It's like something fancy. Maybe a little shaved Parmesan on something. Classy cheese.
Oh, no, I'm glad. No, that was actually a lot easier than I thought.
Yeah, see? I didn't ask any trick questions.
No, we didn't. But it wasn't even the questions. It's just that I just don't know what it is. It's just a phobia.
Yeah.
Something I sort out because the questions were all fine.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know. But anyway, I think
it's probably just practice, you know, like.
Yes, I think you've helped me now.
Yeah. Hopefully. Well, I mean, the first couple of things I did, it was back in my ad days and I got asked to do a phone interview for a magazine thing and my creative director said, you know, do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, I was so excited. And I got on that, oh my God, and I just messed up over and over and over. And then she directly quoted me, and things were out of context, and it was so embarrassing. And after that, I didn't do it for the longest, longest time. And then with all the jealous curator stuff, I've had to, you know, and it was kind of baptism by fire, I think, when Creative Block came out, because there was TV stuff and radio stuff and NPR and like just these things that I knew would be dumb to say no to. But I was terrified. And, you know, it's just practice.
But you're a good interviewer as well. You've made it easy.
Thanks.
Yeah, because you just know when to just, you know, get
interrupt.
in and just ask another question, or you know you're good at leading, getting the questions out.
Good. Well, thank you. That's yeah. I wasn't sure how that would go when I started the podcast. I was like, I've never interviewed anybody, but I can talk till the cows come home. I can chat with anybody for hours. So
that's your gift.
Well, that's yeah, exactly. When Greg said, I was like, I don't know. And he's like, it's just chatting with friends. And I was like, ooh, I love chatting with friends. And he was like, see, there you go.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it. But your own work is gorgeous, Danielle, that you're doing at the minute.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I've seen you comment or like it on Instagram sometimes, and it means a lot to me that you think that you like it, you know?
Yeah, but I would like all of them, only I genuinely didn't want to get your attention.
I was just waiting. Well, now you can. Now you can comment on every single one of them.
Yes, I'll leave you lots of lovely comments. Not that you need them, because everyone loves it.
I know, it's weird. I don't know. I'm so happy though. I'm just enjoying them so much. My computer crashed yesterday and it took like 5 hours to get it fixed, and Greg was fixing it. And so I was like, I can either stand here behind his shoulder or I could go into the studio. I went into the studio and made 3 new pieces.
Oh, really? 3?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think being productive is like, you know, key to, well, for me anyway, just actually keep doing stuff regardless of what, you know.
Yeah, if 80% of it hits the floor, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my big hurdle. You know, I felt like everything had to be perfect or it was pointless, you know. And now it's just like, you should see my studio floor is just like discarded paint strokes that didn't work and little cut out bits of things that I probably will never use. And that's fine. Like, you know, it's, and a lot of that hit home in that thing that you wrote for the book, you know, it's just like, you can't be precious. You have to keep moving. And I was like, yeah, it's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, your work is quite intricate as well. So it's, you know, it is hard to not be precious about it, I suppose. But.
Well, what I try and do is I'll put out a whole bunch of little papers and then just make a whole bunch of brush strokes in the color that I'm playing with that day. And like I said, like 80% of them don't work. You know, and so I flip them over, I use them for something else. And, you know, the one or two that work, I let them dry and they turn into something. And so instead of being like, right, I'm going to do a black, drippy, whatever. And then I get off. And when I do get like that, when I do start getting precious, because now I've got an idea and I want it to look like a wave, it never works. You know, it only looks like a wave when I accidentally kind of went swoosh with a blue stroke. And then it's like, hey, that kind of looks like a wave. But when I'm like, I'm making a wave now.
Yeah,
it doesn't
the
work.
The more you try, the more you think about it, it's hard. It's harder.
I should just have like a big pint of cider in my studio. By the time that bad boy's gone, I won't care what I'm doing. Oh, that's another stroke. I don't know. Is that your secret?
Yeah.
You got your cider, your markers.
I've been dieting, you know, since for the last few weeks, trying to lose the baby fat. So, you know, any mention of food or drink, and I'm just like, oh,
cheese and cider. That's why cheese sprang to mind.
Yeah,
fat.
It's just any food springs to mind now at the minute.
Yeah, well, you know, your body's gonna do. It's gonna get back there, just like you know, just from. Well, I found that I didn't even eat half the time when Charlie was a baby. Like the day would end, I'd be like, wait, I ate half a muffin at 11.
I know.
You know,
that's what's happening to me as well now. It's just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Enjoy every, I mean, it's so cliche to say, but like Charlie's going to be 10 in July.
I know.
And it's like, when did that happen? He was a tiny little baby and now he's like got cool dude hair and he's like sleeping over at friends' houses. And I'm like, but what? Don't
God,
you want mommy to
come? He's a teenager in 3 years.
I know. Shut up, Lola. I don't want to talk about it.
He's going to be an adolescent and he's going to be, you know.
Well, he said
lots of experience with adolescent boys.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, he said the other day, because he's 9, he said, mommy, I'm halfway to moving out. And I was like,
oh my God.
What? Don't talk about it. And I dropped him off at a sleepover the other night and he was so excited and like totally, you know, totally fine and whatever. And I was totally fine. But I said, jokingly, I said, okay, now if you're scared in the night and you want them to come to call mommy, I will come and get you. And he was like, whatever. See you later. I'm trying, but you know, he was such a clingy kid until he was about 7. And now it's just something's changed. So I know you're in the thick of it right now and whatever, but just like suck up every little second because, you know, before you know it, she'll be off to kindergarten and then she'll be doing her own thing. And it's crazy how fast it goes.
I know. I just every day that goes by, I just look at her and love her more and more.
Yeah.
Yay.
It's great. I'm so happy for you.
I know. Yeah.
Yay. Okay. Well, I'm going to let you go so that you have a moment to yourself before the next feeding. And I will see you online and we can talk now.
Okay. And so if there's any bits in that, Danielle, that need to, you know, just, I'm obviously not going to listen to it again because I just couldn't.
I will cut out anything that I think needs to be cut out, but I don't think there's much.
If I'm repeating myself or something doesn't make sense that I said, just please, just whatever.
I've got your back. I'm on it.
Thank
yes.
you.
okay, well, yeah, give Tomasa a big hug for me and I miss you guys. And
no, but when did you say you're coming to Amsterdam?
Well, hopefully in the spring. I got invited to this conference this past year in March and I turned it down because I already had another event, but I said, but if you invite me back next year, I'd be happy to come. So I'm hoping that they say yes. And then what I would love to do is bring Greg and Charlie with me because it's right around Charlie's spring break and just go for 2 or 3 weeks. And I know I've got a lot of listeners and readers and stuff in Paris and London and Amsterdam. So I thought, well, if I'm already over there and the book will have just come out.
Yes, and you could, do some signings and that.
Yeah, and I've never come to, I mean, I've been to Europe. My parents used to live in Brussels, but I've never done anything with the Jealous Curator in Europe, so maybe that's
a
good excuse.
Well, we'll come to Fia, whatever country you go to in Europe, we'll come to Fia.
Okay, deal. I will keep you posted.
I'm looking for any excuse now just to have a little weekend away, you know.
Yeah. Well, you bring your fancy high heels and I'll meet you there.
Yes, right on, sister.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, Danielle, thanks so much.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
You soon.
Bye. Okay, first things first, galleries around the world, call Lola. That was great. Literally nothing for her to worry about. And see, I told you, that was such an inspiring story. And her accent is the best, not to mention her love of cheese. Yeah, I already know that she's going to kill me for leaving that in. Oh, well, thanks to Lola for finally agreeing to do this with me. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting the episode. And thanks to you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.